Need a new recipe? Need to learn a new cooking technique? Menu planning for a special occasion? Well, help is on the way. It's time for Books and Cooks.
Welcome back to Tonia's Kitchen. I'm Tonia King. Joining me again is cookbook author Suzanne Landry, and we're going to dig into this new book a little bit more called The Passionate Vegetable.
Can you share one or two recipes from the book that would be a good thing for listeners to try?
My California quinoa fiesta salad is one of the most popular salads. I won't say the most, but it is, when I do it, I've sold the salad, I've made it for classes, I've made it for events, I've catered it, I've done it for private clients, they all love it. It's that Mexican flavors. When I came to California, I just wanted to incorporate those wonderful Mexican flavors, but using whole grains. And quinoa is light enough that it will take up anything. And it's got the black beans and the Kalamata olives and corn and cilantro and hot pepper flakes to kick it up and cucumbers and celery in it. It's got all these, and of course, lots of tomatoes, lots of wonderful flavors in it. I also take quinoa and make a Greek salad with it. Now there you would just shift it with some maybe marinated artichokes. You can turn it into almost anything. Quinoa is probably the hottest thing right now as far as grains.
Yeah.
Quinoa has so much versatility. So if you wanted to make it Greek, put some marinated artichokes in it, some fresh maybe cherry tomatoes, feta cheese, slices of red onion, some Kalamata olives. Of course, you have to have fresh oregano, a little bit of fresh oregano, and a little bit of fresh basil in that if you wanted to. And I'd say a nice light red wine vinegar and some extra virgin olive oil, a little bit of sea salt, and it's good to go. It's a delicious salad a lot of people love. Another popular salad right now, we've just come out of our tangerine season here in California, and you still get them around the United States. You peel and segment your tangerines, a tangerine and beet salad with feta cheese also. And it's brilliant, the purple beets and the orange segments of the tangerines. It's a wonderful combination.
How are you cooking your beets?
You can either roast them or boil them.
Okay.
In either case, it's been an hour. I do want to caution, though, listeners, that when you're cooking a beet, do not cut below the root, the stem end. Sometimes you, in the grocery stores, you'll buy them, they'll cut low right into the beet itself. And what'll happen is you'll lose flavor and nutrition in the water or when they're even roasting.
Oh, no kidding.
So make sure that you leave an inch or so of the stem on. And even leave that long little tail that's at the end of the beet, leave that on as well. They're very easy to peel after they've boiled in water for an hour or so. Depending on the size of the beet, it could take less time. As long as you put a knife in the center of it and it's tender, you can put the knife in, it's done. Drain it out, put in some cold water, and put your hands immersed in the water, and you'll be able to just rub that beet skin off real easy, and then cube it up and add it to the segmented tangerines.
Isn't there bleeding of the beets into the orange?
I was just going to thank you for asking me. So you could tell you're a cook.
Yes.
You would know right away that that would be bleeding. So to prevent the bleeding of the beet juice onto the tangerines right away, you want to toss your tangerines with a little bit of the olive oil first.
Oh.
The coating of the olives on the olive oil on the tangerines will help the tangerines not absorb that beet juice. It will eventually, but not so quickly.
Oh.
And then the last minute, I toss in some feta cheese, and don't toss it too much because feta cheese will just kind of melt in all that vinegar and become more of a creamy salad, which is okay if you want that.
Now, is that recipe in your book?
The recipe's in the book, and I finish it off with a lot of fresh mint, and another option to fresh mint would be fresh dill.
Mm.
Both of those are a wonderful complement to tangerines and beets.
Now, I want to go back for a minute to the quinoa. How do you cook your quinoa?
Oh, thank you for asking. Every single package I pick up has got the wrong instructions. I need to write to these people because if you put quinoa in cold water and bring them up to boil at the same time, which you can do with almost any grain, quinoa will cook, but it won't open up. It won't be light and fluffy. So you get your better way to do is you get your water boiling. It's always a 2-to-1 ratio, 2 cups of water to 1 cup of quinoa. Get your quinoa measured while that water's coming up to boil and rinse it really well. Nature puts a little bit of a bitter coating on the quinoa to prevent the birds from eating the seeds. So rinse it in not a colander, it'll go right through a colander, but like a mesh strainer.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the water gets boiling, of course you've had a lid on it, put a little pinch of salt in it, I use sea salt, put your quinoa in, cover it Don't have it at medium. The water will boil away before the quinoa completely cooks. Don't have it on high. You want to bring it down to like a medium, just below a medium. Right underneath the medium is a good flame in order to get it cooked. In 15 minutes, it's done. And it's light and fluffy, and this grain separates so that you can easily make it into a cold salad like my California Fiesta quinoa salad that's in the book and the Greek salad. And I do another one with cashews. This combination's wonderful.
Oh, good.
Red grapes sliced. Now, if red grapes aren't in season, you can't get them. Cranberries work really well, dried cranberries, of course. Red grapes, toasted cashews chopped, fresh cilantro, a little bit of celery, and then it finishes with a raspberry vinaigrette. And I have a recipe in the book for raspberry vinaigrette. Everybody thinks it's super fancy to make, and it's not. It's so easy to make. Just like chocolate dipped strawberries couldn't be easier, and people think there's some gourmet item. Anybody can do chocolate dipped strawberries, especially if you have a microwave. But, it's just, it's real easy when you do it that way.
Oh, that recipe sounds just delightful. Wow, I can't wait to try these. I'll tell you what else just caught my eye. My absolute favorite fruit in the whole world is a fresh fig. And I noticed that you have roasted fresh figs with goat cheese. So are you a fig lover?
You know, I have to tell you, not real big, not when they're raw. I mean, I don't buy a package of raw figs and munch on them.
Mm.
They're very popular here because we have fig trees growing in parks around here.
Yeah.
The fig that you want to use for stuffing is a Godota fig because they're flat on the bottom and they're bulbous.
Oh.
And you can cross-cut the top and put a little bit. I have one of those pastry bag things, and I just shoot a little bit of softened goat cheese in there that I put some chopped rosemary in it. And you take a strip of prosciutto, and you want to, I've cut it. I cut the prosciutto lengthwise because I found that a wide piece of prosciutto can be sometimes 2 inches wide.
Yeah.
It buries the fig. You don't see the fig.
Exactly.
So if you cut it in half and you wrap it around the fig and secure it with a toothpick, got to be hot ovens, got to be about 400 degrees. You want to sweat the prosciutto fast without melting the goat cheese and making the fig pudding.
Yes, exactly.
It's a little tricky. A hot oven for maybe 10 minutes is all you really need on those figs. And we throw figs with all sorts of things here in California. We'll put it in salads. We'll put it with blood oranges. We just, when they're in season, and there's only twice a year that we can get them in season, and we get the Mission, we get the Codotas, and we get some other varieties that are not so common that I don't think are types that we necessarily ship other places. I don't think.
I don't know. I've just been a fig person my whole life, so I was excited to see that in your book. Now, any other tips that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, I say about healthy eating tips. People get overwhelmed when they think that they want to start eating healthy. My best advice is that two things you do. Number one, change the quality. Don't change your diet necessarily in terms of, okay, I'm going to become a vegan overnight, or I'm going to do raw food, or all sometimes these radical changes. Most of us human beings don't like radical changes. You know, we'll bounce back.
Right.
But a small change that you can make is upgrade the quality of the ingredients that you choose. So, A, go more fresh instead of canned and frozen and processed.
Mm-hmm.
Two, now you want to pick perhaps if you've been doing fresh food, what is the next step for you? Instead of non-organic chicken, let's go for organic chicken that won't have antibiotics in it and will have been fed organic feed. So it's a better quality chicken, or maybe organic produce if it's available in their area. That's really number one with two parts. Number two is now change the ratio of what you eat. Now, I was raised on a very standard American diet, which is based on many European diets. My mom is European, and it was meat, potatoes, and vegetables. 50% of my plate was meat. But that's what was standard in America for a long time. I talked to a lot of people across the United States, and that's kind of what we had. It was some kind of starch and a small portion of vegetables. Just change that. If you look at the plate and 50% is meat, you got about maybe 30% starch and the rest of it is vegetable, or maybe 30% vegetables and 20% starch. Now change it around where 50% of that plate is vegetables. Some of those vegetables should be raw, always. When we cook our vegetables, we lose the enzymes, and 60 to 80% of vitamin C is lost after 10 minutes of cooking any vegetable that is high in vitamin C. Not all vegetables are high in vitamin C, but let's take tomatoes, for instance. Everybody loves tomato sauce. There's not a whole lot of vitamin C left in tomato sauce, honestly.
You mean because it's cooked off?
Yes, but there's other wonderful, there's lycopene in it. There's wonderful other nutrients that are still intact. But that's why every day you should have a raw salad or you should have some raw fruit, because the raw food, vegetables or fruit, will give you the vitamin C and give you the enzymes that you lose when you cook your food. And that's those two things. If they just do that, it doesn't have to be so radical. It can be a gradual change. Heck, I think it took 2 years for us to really gradually change into a diet that was pretty different than what we had started off with.
Yeah.
And my kids, by the way, footnote, without the calcium, without the dairy food, I found many, many sources of calcium. They're 6'4", 6'3", and 6'1".
Oh, my goodness.
Anybody thinks that kids have to have dairy food in order to raise or to grow good bones, then have them contact me.
Yeah, well, you know, I know a lot of greens have loads of calcium.
Yes.
You know, kale, broccoli, they're all loaded with calcium.
Yes. The family of oxalic acids, the oxalic acid binds up with calcium and iron in the body. So you don't get as much calcium from spinach as you would from kale and collard greens.
Oh, interesting.
That's why I focused more on those heartier greens. In California, kale anything is so popular. We're doing kale chips, cheesy kale chips. I do these cheesy kale chips. You would swear it's got cheddar cheese on them.
So tell me how to make those. Tell me how to make them.
There's no cheese on it. It's not cheese. It's nutritional yeast and cashews blended up with a red pepper.
Tell me how to make those kale chips.
Okay. So you have to use curly leaf kale because the curly leaves will grab the sauce. The sauce is made by putting in a good blender. It doesn't have to be a food processor, but it has to be a powerful blender. A whole chopped red pepper without the seeds.
Okay.
One juice of a whole lemon, about a half a teaspoon of sea salt. Now you can add to it a half a teaspoon of garlic powder. You can add a little shot of cayenne. You can kind of change the original recipe to jazz it up if you want to. But the basic recipe is lemon, salt, and red pepper. And then you blend that until you get this red liquid. Then you put a quarter of a cup of nutritional yeast in it. You find that in any health food store. It's very high in B vitamins. A lot of vegans are using nutritional yeast on their popcorn. They use it in a lot of recipes to give it that cheesy flavor. It's an amazingly cheesy flavor.
Wow.
And you end up, because of the red pepper and this nutritional yeast, which is kind of a yellow color, you end up with this, you know, Velveeta-looking melted cheese. Oh, wait, I haven't finished. I'm sorry. What was I talking about? So after the nutritional yeast goes in, then you put a cup of raw cashews, not toasted, not salted. They have to be raw. And they don't have to be sprouted or anything, just raw. And you blend it until you don't see any of the cashew grit at all. Just a little. It's smooth and creamy, and it's got that gorgeous salmon color.
Mm.
So that's your sauce. Take that and put that into getting back to the kale, you got to wash it, got to dry it, and you want to just strip the kale off the stem.
Okay.
By just holding the end of the stem, taking your fingers wrapped around the stem and doing one quick movement of pushing the leaf off the stem.
Sure.
You don't want to cut it up. You don't want to break it up. Whatever size it ends up, leave it. The bigger the better, because they shrink to about a third of the size. So if it starts off too small, they will burn. They just won't have any flavor to them. So you want big, fat leaves. Take your leaves, put your sauce in the bowl, and work it with your hands so that the leaves are completely coated with this sauce. And then lay them out on a single sheet, a cookie sheet, but single layer. I use parchment paper all the time. It's such an easy cleanup.
Oh, yeah.
And then a single layer, though. And now this is really a raw food recipe. It's meant to be dehydrated for 12 hours.
Okay.
But I don't have a dehydrator. So I put it in the oven at 200 degrees for 2 hours. Don't even have to look at it. If you've done two trays, because sometimes a head will make two trays worth of cheesy kale,
Yeah. You
might want to switch halfway through, put the top one and switch the trays.
Okay.
But on that, 2 hours for 200 degrees, they're so addictive. How this all started in California is the health food stores were selling. One company was making this, and selling it for, I swear to God, $7.95 for a bag of cheesy kale.
Oh.
You got 3.5 ounces of cheesy kale, and they couldn't keep it in stock.
Oh, my goodness.
I was buying. I was like, this is a ridiculous addiction. It's very expensive.
Oh, wow.
Until I learned how to make it. Then other companies started making it. So now it's the hottest thing out here, at least, this cheesy kale or kale chip.
We're talking with Suzanne Landry. She is the author of a brand new book called The Passionate Vegetable. Suzanne, what is your website?
www.thepassionatevegetable.com, or they can also go to www.suzannelandry.com, and that's my blog website where they can get some information and some recipes and some videos that they've done. They can also go to YouTube and look at my channel, The Passionate Vegetable. I have lots of videos up right now.
Well, there are beautiful pictures in this book, along with wonderful recipes. I'm very excited to go through them and try them. I can't wait. It's been such a pleasure chatting with you today, Suzanne.
Same here. Thank you very much for having me on.
Find out more details about the new book from Suzanne Landry at our website, toniaskitchen.com. Still to come, the barbecue king joins me, Stephen Reichlin, coming up next on Tonia's Kitchen on 1350 KSRO.